I can tell right now that this is the best deck. I've been to all three decks, and this is by far the best deck. So I'm going to do this aloha thing one more time because I want the other two decks to hear us. All right, ready? Aloha! All right. Okay, we're going to start this meeting. Welcome to the Mahalo Cruise meeting, WCNA 31. Again, my name is Bob, and I'm an addict from Hawaii. Okay, what I'd like to do, we're going to have some fun. I haven't picked the readers yet. So what I'd like to do is somebody celebrating an NA anniversary today by any chance here?
One guy got 9 years today.
Huh? 9 years. Where is he? 9 years. Can you come up and read for us, please? Dan? Is Dan in the house? Okay, I don't see him. Is he coming? Okay, did somebody celebrate an anniversary yesterday? How about 2 days ago? Right here, come on up. Read for us. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program?
Okay, we'll get her next time.
How's everybody doing? Enjoying the entertainment?
Okay, there you go. What is the Narcotics?
Thank you. Hi, my name's Diane, and I'm an addict. Hey, family, I've been a little seasick. That's all. That's the only reason I'm tipsy. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly, stay clean. All right. Thank you.
Okay, who was the other person back here that had an anniversary? Come on up. Is Dan here yet? Did Dan make it back? Okay, Dan, we're going to have you read at the end. We're going to have you read We Do Recover after the speaker, okay?
My name's Val and I'm an addict. Okay, why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of our welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jails or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these, this back and forth stuff. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. But getting better, we suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. 20!
20 years. All right.
All right. At this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker. Golfer extraordinaire, John G. from the Big Island of Hawaii.
Aloha, everyone. My name is John G. I'm from Kona, Hawaii, and I'm an addict. And my home group is Hope Hustlers Friday night in Kailua, Kona. A really special home group. I'm going to try and hold this. When they asked me to speak, Tom McCall, and asked me if, he goes, John, you get seasick. I had no idea what he was asking. I go, oh, yeah, really bad, really bad. And he goes, good, because you're speaking on the Mahalo cruise. And so I've taken a little bit of the ginger that they offer, like about 20 of the capsules. I'm doing real good. I know that we've had a moment of silence for the people down south a few times. We're going to do it again right now, all right? We've got a lot of people on this planet suffering, but some are hitting home right now, right down there, some of our brothers and sisters in the fellowship. I'm not going to take too much time because I have another moment of silence for Sarah Howard from Maui, who just passed away. It was a beautiful, beautiful addict. She was the kind of addict that would tell you how what you didn't want to hear but needed to hear. But she was always there for you, no matter what. And nobody loved an addict like Sarah Howard. So let's have a moment of silence for those people suffering down the south and Sarah Howard, please. Thanks so much. I want to try and bring God in. I just would love to see a show of hands of those in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous who have over 20 years. Just let me see 20 years or plus. Look around at the recovery. I'd like to see 10 years or plus, please. 10 years or plus. All right. How about over 5 years? Over 5 years clean. Over a year clean. Who's clean over a year here? All right. That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. I know there are some addicts in here that are under a year clean. The gift of recovery, we get many blessings. It is a gift. It's truly a gift. You guys have all come really far to paradise, but there's an addict. There's an addict here I know who's got like a day, got less than a day on this boat. And the reason I know is I brought him here with me. And he came to this convention with, you know, like 9 days. He was doing all right at 9 days, and he wanted to come, and he came to the convention. He was a little overwhelmed, and the disease grabbed him by the balls and took him back out there, took him down, and he got loaded, you know. And so my message tonight, I'm going to share some of my experience, strength, and hope. I'm going to share just a little bit of how bad it was for me, because he's from my home group. He's from my home area. And Kona, I don't know if anyone there has been there except a few of you, who I love. It's really small. It's hard to get recovery here in Hawaii. It's not easy. And it's truly not easy. There are not 17 meetings a day and all kinds of time during the day. We're lucky we have one meeting a day. So I'm going to share a little bit of that. What I wanted to do, though, is... See, I'm an addict from New York. I'm an addict who had to go 6,000 miles away to get clean in Hawaii. And that's what worked for me. That's what I had to do. And I was a hope to die. I had no hope. I hear people talk about dreams coming true and hope. I had no hope, never had any dreams. All I cared about was getting and finding ways and means to get more. All I cared about. I hate to stand here sometimes and say that I was a liar, cheat, and a thief, but that's what I was. I was a high school dropout in ninth grade. They kicked me out of high school. They told me they didn't want me in the town that I lived in anymore. And my father, it was the end of the Vietnam War, and he says, why don't you join the Army? Why don't you join the military? So, and that's what I did. And what I did is I ran. I learned how to shoot dope in the military. I learned how to run with you guys on the streets. And I spent 20-some years doing it. And I learned, like some of you who got some time in here, all about the 80s and the craze, or the cocaine craze and the freebasing craze. Because that's what I came to find out. I was a rock pipe smoking freebaser. And I love to cook it myself. And I love the glass pipe. And that's what brought me to my knees, my third bottom. And I was the kind of bass head that would smoke so much bass. I had wet tissues in my mouth all the time because I had all these blisters and sores in my mouth. And I was having seizures about once a month, really bad ones. And I was constantly pulling apart pens and any kind of thing that would poke in my ear because of the humming. You know, the buzz, that humming would never stop. And I'd be like this all the time trying to, you know, get that thing out that was humming in there. And so I was a mess. And what happened is I was actually on top of a deli in New York in this little dive. And I was in there and I'd ripped off a dealer. And I was in there and I was rocking up a couple of 8-balls and I had picked up a girl. And I don't know about you, but for me, everything had stopped working. I was not able to eat. I did not have hard bowel movements anymore, and sex was a thing of the past. But I would still try as hard as I could, and there was nothing there. And I ended up having another seizure, and I'd already kicked her out of there. I said, "Get out of here, man." You know, she was like, "You had sex?" I was like, "No, I don't even know what that is anymore. You gotta go. You gotta go." And I was laying there when I came to, all alone. And I was the kind of addict who was so fear-based that I had to have you guys around me all the time. All the time. I could not be alone. I couldn't be alone. I'd have you guys, I'd have running partners, I'd have just girls that I'd abuse just to have them near me, and I was still always alone. Well, I found myself waking up after a seizure on the floor above this deli. It was like 5:30 in the morning, and what I did was I had my first spiritual awakening. I had my first moment of clarity that I've ever been able to recognize in all my bottoms and all my using and all the times I've been in and out of jail. This was the first time that something inside me said, "John, you do not have to use no more." And I was just laying there and I got up. And I don't know why. I went down the street to the block. In the corner there was a phone and I called my family. And I grew up in a house with 7 sisters and 3 brothers. And at this point in my life, I had not seen any of them for at least 5 years. And my sister, who was here in Hawaii, I hadn't seen in 15 years. And I called my family, and they couldn't believe it was me. They couldn't believe it was me. And it just so happened they were all back in New York because my littlest brother had just gotten married. And they really had wished that I was with them and been there with them. But they couldn't believe it was me. And they said, "Where are you, John? Where are you?" And I was like, "I'm so-and-so on this block, and here I am, and come get me." And they said, "Hold on, John, just hold on. You stay there." So what I did is I hung up the phone, I walked down to a crack house right around the corner. And two of my running partners had just did some B&E or some robbery or something, and they each had like $500, and they were like, "Come on, John, let's go, let's run. And I told them, I said, "You know what, you just hang right here." And I ended up going back up to that phone booth, and if my family didn't show up, I know I would have gone back running again. And the next thing I knew, I sat there, and time just kept passing. The next thing I know, my brother and my sister pulled up and pulled me into that car and took me. And I knew that they were going to take me to my sister's house where everybody was after the wedding and put me in the master bedroom and love me. And what they did is they took me to Yonkers on the edge of Bronx, and they dropped me off in a detox that they had somehow miraculously called social services or called the powers that be and somehow got a way to get me into this hospital because I had no medical or nothing and they didn't have no money. And somehow they got me in there. and they said, "We love you. Good luck." And they put me in this detox. They put me in this detox unit, and it was one flew over the cuckoo's nest for me. It was truly bizarre. I had been in jail in five different states. At that time, I'd lived in five different states, and every state I'd been in jail. And but I had never been in a cuckoo's nest like this, man. And it was all of you guys in there. And I don't know. I slept for like the first couple of days, you know. Everyone was lined up for the medication and stuff, and I was like, no, I'm not, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I had found a refrigerator, you know, they had the room with the refrigerators, like six of them filled with ice cream. I just kept going there then, just going there, get all the ice cream you want, you'll be okay. And then they had the day room where we all sat around with the TV, watching TV. And I loved it, because there's this one man, this big man, and every 15 minutes he would get up, and he'd change that channel. And he'd look at everybody, and he'd sit back down. He'd get up every 15 minutes, man. I knew I was home. Anyhow, so this is going to go out right now to all of you who are in service with Narcotics Anonymous. If you served in any capacity, in any part of your region, your area, your world, any H&I, any PI, anything like that, give yourself a hand now. Please give yourself a hand now. You are the reason an addict like me does not use anymore. Because after a few nights in there, they had an AA meeting. And I went to that, and I think I slept through it. I was doing a lot of sleeping. I was 140 pounds on a 6'4" frame, and I was doing a lot of ice cream eating and a lot of sleeping. And what happened was, the next night, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting came into that facility. And I had only heard of Narcotics Anonymous at this time. This was 1988, June 28th. And I heard it one time in a, it was a camp, it was a jail, it was an institution, I don't know, it was a honor farm where you go when you're going to get out. And I asked them if the women from the women's tier are going to go, and they said, no, we do a cell. And I said, well, I ain't going then. So it was the only other time I heard about Narcotics Anonymous. So I went to this meeting because I had to go, they made us go, we all had, you know, slippers and little suits on and stuff. So I went to this meeting, and a man from Narcotics Anonymous led this meeting in this lockdown in this hospital, and he looked like me, he talked like me, everything was about him was me. I thought I was looking in the mirror, except it was what I thought of me. It's what I thought I used to look like, because this man was smiling, and he was looking me in the eye, and he was laughing, and I ended up like chewing his brain out afterwards. When I heard who's an addict, I knew at that moment, I knew that I was home. There was no doubt. And everyone else had crumbled off to their beds or whatever, and I grabbed him, man. I just said, come on, what's up? And he said, John, you're an addict like me. I use like you. You never, ever, ever have to use again one day at a time. And that was the first time anybody had ever told me that. And I believed them 100%. And my spirit at that moment for the first time woke up. And what happened is I ended up getting out of that facility, and my family said, you know what? We're not letting go of you this time. We're not going to put you in the master bedroom at your sister's house. We're gonna send you to Hawaii, where your sister, who is my closest sister, she was my running partner when I was a teenager. Her and I were, Mutt and Jeff. We were going to a bar. At 15 years old, she'd get me into bars, and we'd be on the tables dancing. She was my running dog. And I hadn't seen her in 15 years because she had chosen a different path. And I came out here to Hawaii with a sack, a little brown sack. And I had a fishnet shirt on. And I had these baggy blue pants that they had gotten me. And I had a couple of drawers, and that was it. That's all I had to my name in 1988. And I came to Hawaii. But first, this brave street drug addict who put his knife up your nose and threatened to pull your nostril out had to call ahead and check with the system to make sure there's Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And I found out there was three of them at the time in Kona. Three meetings. I said, okay, I'll go. And what I did was, the reason I said I was so brave, you know, we talk about, like, in the triangle of self-obsession about, you know, our past and resentment and the present, where we have love or hate or, you know, joy, and the future, which is either fear or faith. And I was the kind of person my whole life, it was all about fear. It was all about the next day, about the next bag, about the next whatever. I never seemed to get back in the resentment area. It was always fear-based. So when I got to Kona, and I was on the plane, I wasn't coming like you guys, in recovery, ready, coming to celebrate your recovery and be on this beautiful boat. I was coming and thinking that the meetings here, they'd be like, you know, people sitting around little grass skirts, sharing recovery. I had no clue whatsoever. And I landed, and I couldn't make a meeting at first at all. Could not make a meeting at all without dragging my sister there. There was no way. And a beautiful man named Abbott G. Some of you might have known him. He was the first man that I ever let hug me, that I can ever remember. And he hugged me, and at my first meeting that I spoke at, I'd been in Kona a couple of weeks. And it was a Thursday night meeting on the beach, and there was only about eight of us there, and they had all shared, and there was like 20 minutes left, and they're all looking at me. You know how it goes, right? And there I was, and all of a sudden, I opened my mouth, and just like throw up, just like I kind of feel like doing right now, I just started crying like a baby, just spitting out my nose, out my eyes, and I shut down real fast, boom. I only said about 20 words, and I shut down. My mother checked out when I was 11. She committed suicide when I was an 11-year-old boy. I was a real badass punk, and I was already getting high, and I told her that morning, I hate you, man. I hate you. Just leave me alone. I hate you. She wanted me to take out the garbage or something like that, and I just abused her, just like a lot of little kids do, just like my little boy does to me sometimes now. But I didn't understand, and that day she checked out. She had another disease. She decided to take her life. And I never, never forgave her, and never, ever forgave me. And my whole using, see, something happens to some of us addicts. Some of us were born with this, or it's genetic or something. Some of us have our hearts smashed at some time during our path early on, and we find a way to medicate it, and we choose drugs and alcohol, and that was my path. And I did not cry. I came into that house with all those kids, and they were all crying and stuff, and I would not cry. Not cry. And what happened for me was a couple of days had gone by. They told us, well, you got to still go back to school. You got to go back to school. And I went back to school, and the kids were sitting there talking and whispering and looking at me, and nobody came up to me. Nobody. And that was it, man. I was wounded big time. I hated everybody. I hated you all. And I was hurt. So when Abby grabbed me and hugged me, my spirit, my heart, grew a little, changed. And I was a member of Narcotics Anonymous at that moment. I knew that I was not going back. No matter how hard this was going to be, I wasn't going back. And I've never shared this at a meeting. And because we're on water, and I'm like seasick, and I'm wobbling, I thought of this. I have never shared it. I shared this at my home group like 15 years ago because it happened. But Abbott and a bunch of them were scuba divers. And they were going to take this New York John the Dove fiend who just moved there and make him a scuba diver. And I was so excited. I was so happy that they were going to include me. There was like five of them. They're all divers, you know, we're certified divers, you know, and I was really excited. So they suited me up, and they got me. It was my buddy Bob Beard and all of them just suited me up, and I was so excited. And what happened was we get down there, and they're kind of better than me, you know, and like, you know, we're like 20 feet. And, you know, they're a little bit away from me, you know, and I, you know, but I'm okay. Then all of a sudden I see this eel, this moray eel come shooting out of a rock. And I'm like, oh my God. And, I'm struggling. I got water getting in my mask, and I'm trying to get down and see it and look at it. And like, And I'm like, oh, man. And then I see, you know, like, Abbott's 10 feet away, and I'm trying to swing to him. I get him. I say, come on, come on, Bob. I swim Bob. I go like this, down here. And we all swim back over to this one little area, and I'm pointing down right here, man. Right there, the eel, it's right there. And all of a sudden, we're down. We're getting closer. We're getting closer, and we're looking down there, and all of a sudden, this tube sock comes out of the rock. Like, this tube sock, a little white tube sock, and goes back in. I was like, damn, I thought it was a moray eel. So, you know, we get out of the water, and they're, like, all around me, and they're just kind of like... And the next thing I know, they're calling me Sock Gusto, man. I'm like, you know, I'm going around going, that ain't right, man. That's cold, man. You're Sock Gusto, man, you know. I'm glad it didn't last too long, because I became a pretty good diver. But what it did is it taught me that you guys weren't laughing at me or talking about me. You were laughing with me, and you made me feel good about myself. And I learned that day, sitting on those rocks in Hawaii with other addicts, that John was an okay guy. He was an okay guy. And what happened is I went on the journey, the 12-step journey of Narcotics Anonymous, and I became of service with Narcotics Anonymous, and I embraced it with everything I had. Because in Kona, like I said, it was small. In 88, I mean, Renee was there. She was there. It was small. And they were like, shit, John, you're working a program. You got a sponsor. You're doing good. You got 4 months. We're going to make you some, you know, and that's what they did. They put me in service. I've been in service with Narcotics Anonymous ever since. They ended up electing me here in Hawaii, the RD of Hawaii. And let me tell you something, for an addict who never really finished 8th grade but got shoved into 9th grade and was very illiterate, ADA, and everything else you can say, for me to evolve into a human being who you guys would believe in enough to represent here in the state of Hawaii, I was overwhelmed. I was so blessed. I felt so blessed. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to tell you about some miracles and about your story. Because your story is a part of my story. And I shared with my brother Danny. Some of you guys know Danny from Bali. And now Danny and I don't know if you've noticed that some dances and stuff, we get a little affectionate, a little close, you know? And that's something I can do. That's what I can do today as a scared little homophobic boy from New York. And I shared with Danny. And just by the way, we are not gay, him and I, even though a lot of you girls think we are. We just did that because we wanted you not to be afraid to come and approach us so we can chow you. And you were like, well, we're gay, man. Come on, we can hang with these two guys. But, not really. He's my brother. But I shared with him a story by Bala Shem Tov. And it was a long story. And Bala Shem Tov was a very, very holy man, a rabbi. And I was done sharing this story. Because, you know, I was asked to speak, I was just like, you know, what am I going to say? What should I share? You know, I'm a Kona boy. I've never been asked to share anywhere except Hawaii. I have 17 years in Narcotics Anonymous. I've shared... Thank you. Thank you very much. Go ahead. Feel free to clap. An addict for 17 years is a miracle. All right? It's a miracle. But so I shared the story with him, and I respect his opinion highly. And he sat there, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, and he's a Jewish boy. So I thought, shit, you know, it's a Jewish rabbi, holy story. These guys will love this. This is good stuff. He was like, well, it's a little bit long. And that's how gentle and loving he was. So I'm not going to tell you that story, but what the gist of it is the gist of it is that Bala Shem Tov preached and told stories, beautiful stories all the time. And he said that when a man comes to you or a woman comes to you and tells your story, looks at you and tells your story, that your sins are forgiven and you start to heal. And that's what we do here. We do that here. And I love that. I truly, truly love that. So I'm going to tell you a couple of stories, and that's all I'm going to do here, all right? Because I'm definitely going to use the men's room. I'm going to share a story, and it's called the World Convention. The World Convention, 2005 in Hawaii, because you guys are part of that story, all right? This is what's happened to me right now, right here, this weekend. Because one of my biggest blessings that I've learned is to be present, to be in the now, to be right here, right now. God is right here, right now. He's always right here, right now. All I got to do is touch him. All I got to do is embrace him. I can get out there like anybody else. I can get out there like the guy who was arguing with Bob at the door over nothing. Over nothing. Nothing. And then the two addicts, I don't know what happened, something happened. They came back to the present. They came back to the now. Next thing you know, Bob's got a lay on him. He's up on the stage crying like a baby. He's lit. And his heart grew a little bit more. And the guy who was having the static with grew a little bit more. I was walking with Danny, my brother. We're talking about miracles and magic here. Phyllis, I'm going to get to Phyllis. Don't you worry, I'm going to get you, Phyllis. I love magic and miracles. I'm all about magic and miracles. And I love the spirit. But me and Danny, I always buy a lot of tickets because I'm blessed today. I have total abundance from my higher power. And I like to buy extra tickets for these functions. Phyllis knows, you know, give me two of those. I'll take two of those. Give me two of those. Because somebody's story or something needs a ticket sometimes. And I'm always running into somebody who wants to give me a ticket. I'll give them a ticket. So I look at my package. I go, darn, I didn't buy any banquet tickets. No banquet tickets. Danny's going, you didn't buy any Saturday night banquet tickets at your own damn world convention? I was like, no, man. He goes, we got to get you one. I was going, yeah. He goes, we need a ticket. We need a ticket for the banquet. We're just walking down the hall going to the programming. You know, there's nobody even there. We need a ticket. Danny's going. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, I got a ticket for sale. Ain't nobody there. All of a sudden, a lady comes walking out of the living room. She says, I have a ticket for you. She gave me a ticket. That's the magic. That's the miracles. That's what happens around here. If you're present and you're in the now and you are being aware of what is going around you, that's what happens here. When I came to Hawaii, before I braced this thing 100%, the Kona Fellowship dragged me to a Maui gathering. A Maui gathering where they'd celebrate recovery. I had never been to any function with you guys for anything. And I was so damn scared and fearful because my sister said she couldn't come. And this big tough New York guy was at that time still dragging his sister with him everywhere he had to go. So she said, no, just take a camera and take pictures of people. You know, just take pictures of people, man. People love taking pictures. I said, all right, I'll do that. So I get there and I climb in a Boy Scout camp on Maui. And I walk in, there's like, oh, God, man. Oh, man, there's like 60 people. 60 drug addicts all in this one Boy Scout camp. I was bugging, man. I was still bugging. I was crawling in my skin still. So I'm sitting in the corner of this room, and I got the camera up in my head, and I'm just kind of scoping. I'm not even taking pictures. I'm just afraid to put the camera down. I'm just kind of looking around at you all like this. And all of a sudden, from across the room, there was somebody looking at me through a camera. I was just like, oh, my God, they're staring at me. And then all of a sudden, I just took the camera, and I went like this. I just lowered it down like this. And the person over there just went, lowered it like this. And they smiled at me like this. And I had the greatest weekend I had ever had in my life. And that person was Phyllis right here. And this lady here has been my best friend, my best bud, my entire recovery. And she is someone I love dearly and has helped me grow. So now what I'm going to share is about something that happened to me yesterday. And I need to share that because that's what's going on with me right now, right here, my presence. This is part of my story. This is what's going on with me. In my wreckage, I had two children. who I abandoned, me and the mother of their children, were both Freebasers, and we would neglect them all the time, leave them in back rooms, and they're only like 4 and almost 2. And I would drag him in this beat up car or stolen car to go cop and do whatever I had to do. I've got to stop playing with this thing, huh? And I had a, thanks, Phyllis. See, she always needs what I need. Yeah. Anyhow, let me hurry on the speed up here. This is a hard part for me. And I know, at the time, I never knew how to love myself. And I neglected these children really badly. But since I got into recovery, they've come to Hawaii, they've gone to school here in Hawaii, they've been a part of my life. And not only this felon, this 3-time convicted felon, for whatever reason, the state of Hawaii has decided I'm a pretty good dad too, and they've made me a foster dad. And I have 2 foster daughters today. I've got Makanani, she's a 9-year-old. If you've ever seen Lilo and Stitch, I got Lilo. I got Lilo, and she's the greatest. I also have a new son, Finn McCool, an Irish boy. I've got Makanani's sister, Alaula, who's one of us. She's 17 years old. She's in my heart. She went back out there. She's out again. And my wife, who has been there for me all this time, has 2 kids too. So with my 2 kids in New York, her 2 kids, our 1 kid, Finn McCool, and 2 foster kids, we have a lot of kids in our world. But what happened for me is I was at the reggae concert. Anybody at the reggae concert last night, party in the jam? Was that good? That was good. I love to jam. I love to rock. I love to jam. And I was up front. My wife came running in. And what we do, we open our house in Kona to, like, people, to my brothers, to addicts. And I have this 22-year-old friend of my daughter, Tiffany's, and she's, her name's Jasmine. And she's pregnant, and she's an addict. And her mom is a stone-cold addict. And she's been living in my house for about 3 weeks only, 4 weeks. She got all her stuff over there and everything. And anyhow, I'm at the reggae concert, I'm in the moment. I'm loving you, and I'm dancing with you, and I'm just being present, because that's where God is, and that's where I can feel the love with you guys. And all of a sudden, my wife comes running in, and she goes, John, they just found Jasmine. She just fell off a roof in Ala Moana. She was over here for the weekend. And she had died. She dead. And I was just like blown away. I didn't even know how to comprehend that at that moment. I haven't even processed it. I'm telling you, this just happened. What was it, last night? I haven't even processed it. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and she goes running out after her daughter, Tiffany, who is Tiffany's best friend. She's the one who brought her around to our house, introduced her to us. All of a sudden, I'm just trying to, I'm like, you know, God, what is going on here? And all of a sudden, my wife had just ran away, and there's this big, large man in my face. This big, large man looking at me. And he's looking at me with love in his eyes, and he's looking at me, and he leans over and just gives me one of those big bear hugs that you big guys can give. And he looks at me and goes, John, I just want to let you know that I heard you share in Maui when you shared about the baby that died with those 2 addicts who lost their baby. And I went through the same thing, and you healed my heart. You really helped me so much. And he gave me another big bear hug. Just like that. And he walked away. So right then, in a matter of like 30 seconds, I had lost this little girl who'd been in my house, who I'd been helping, this little drug addict with the Pierce meals and everything. And the next thing I know, I got another person in my face telling me, thank you very much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and helping me heal my heart. So, I don't know about you guys, but that's magic, and that's a miracle. And both of those things are making me who I am today, making me be able to lend my hand and my heart to help and heal you in any way I can when we cross paths. When I come up to you and I hug you, I know, just like you told me, that hugs stand for helping us grow spiritually. Every time you give a hug or get a hug, you are growing spiritually, helping us grow spiritually. I'm going to keep hugging you guys. And then, you know what? I've heard all kinds of stuff about what's going on within the 24 hours. You know, they're saying now her mother is like totally out there and she's in corner, and they're saying it was a suicide and all. And you know what? Suicide's never been an option for me. My mother took that away from me. And, you know, I hate when we start talking gossip about each other. I hate when we say things that hurt each other enough to make us leave these rooms. We have got to stop the gossip. We have got to stop the vicious attacks that we do to each other, because they are not spiritually centered and they are not God-centered. And I have no idea what's going down right now. All I know is another addict has died as a direct result of this disease. And like I said before, I know there's an addict here today that has less than 24 hours. I brought him here. He came over here. He was so excited about coming over here. He was so excited, but he's only had a few days. He's in the grip of the disease. He ain't in recovery yet. But guess what? He's got less than a day, and he's on a boat cruise at the World Convention eating a damn dinner with a bunch of addicts in recovery. And you know what? He might not get it, but he might get it. He might get this gift. He might get this gift. Kind of scattered. Does anybody, have I shared enough? What time do we have? How much more? We're coming into the docks. Okay, I'm going to try and wrap it up. What else do I want to share? I don't know. I was thinking about trying to think about it, you know. I was thinking, because I knew if you came to Hawaii and you paid for this cruise, you're a diehard addict who's going to do all these functions and this one after it's over, that like you don't want to hear about my spiritual process. You don't want to hear about my favorite traditions, which are 1, 3, 5, and 10. If you want, we can go into detail over those anytime you want. Our literature says it's 2 minutes. All right. Did you see that man here? He was great. Wasn't he great? Man, I thought that girl from Russia was going to turn around and haul off and nail him. Knock him down. I was like, Charlie, don't go up to that Japanese lady. Please, you understand? You will shame her, man. You know what they do? She'll be like, oh, man, they cut me off. I'm stinking. I was like, nah, don't do it, Charlie. Charlie, you just did me. Damn. And how about Luigi? Come on, girls, admit it. Just go ahead and admit it. Admit it. Have you ever seen a more gorgeous addict in recovery? I tell you, I got a Woody, man. I was just like, damn. Yeah, I was at a stage, and he was up there, and they had like 90 girls trying to get his autograph on, like, their G-string and their shirts and shit. I was like, damn, why'd they beat me to him? So really, 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 really wonderful, wonderful convention. I am truly blessed to be in recovery and be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I am blessed to be here. I am blessed to be anywhere. I'm going to leave you with this. There's two things that I've seen every speaker share this weekend, every single one, that has helped them stay clean, and that is a higher power and making meetings regularly on a regular basis. Each one shared about their higher power, about God, about Buddha, about Jesus, about Allah. I don't care what it is. They shared about a power greater than themselves, and they also shared about making meetings regularly. I'm also going to pitch service. Right now, I have to do it. I implore you to keep giving it away. This cruise has got a lot of our elderly statesmen in it with a lot of clean time. And you know what? I'm telling you right now from personal experience, we have addicts dying today from this disease. And what happens is we get a little bit of clean time, we can get really comfy. I'm a golfer. I'm a poker player. I got a world I'd love to share with you guys. But I tell you what, I am not going to leave the war zone. Wherever you're going back home to, please bring a little aloha. Bring some of the aina that you learned about here, about the land. And please, please keep giving it away. please keep giving it away. My name is John Manatic. Thank you so much for letting me speak here tonight.
Clear one more time for our speakers. Jacques Cousteau. Can we get Dan up here real quick and we do recover?
I'm Dan. I'm an addict from Marysville, Washington. We do recover. When it comes to the end of the road, we find out we cannot go on function without a human being. Either with or without drugs, we face the same dilemma. What's left to do? There seems to be one alternative. Either go on the best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, few addicts had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a spiritual, simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for 9 years, Ennie.
Okay, real quickly, just grab somebody next to you and let's go with the end with the third step prayer, please. God, take care of me in my life. Guide me in my recovery and show me how to live. Aloha.